Hey, it's Aidan here. Just before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know about something new. It's called the Magician's Business Group. We've just opened up a Facebook group designed to help you guys as entertainers grow and improve your entertainment business. So if that is you, if you are an entertainer that wants help growing and improving your entertainment business, just head over to thesuccessfulmentalist.com/group and the magic of the internet will take you right there. Or if you're like me, have the Facebook app on your phone, open it up and search for the Magician's Business Group and you'll go straight there. Anyways, back to the episode.
Hey, this is Eric Dittleman and you're listening to the Successful Mentalist Podcast.
Oh, hello and welcome to the show. This is going to be such an interesting discussion. I think this is the first time that myself and Ashley have actually had a conversation with you, Eric, which is going to be interesting in and of itself. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad we finally got it all to work out with time zones and daylight savings and schedules. So thanks for having me.
The weird world as it is, but you're here and you're excited and we've got you on and we just have to hope that the internet doesn't cut out. But if you're listening to this, be safe in the knowledge it didn't cut out, because I don't know why I bring it up, like you listen to it on the podcast, so you know it might cut out any minute now, so be warned. Who knows what's going to happen. Eric, for anyone that doesn't know any of your work, could you give us a brief minute, 30 second summary? Who are you and what do you do?
Sure. I am a professional mentalist that tours around a lot of colleges and corporate events in the United States, although I've done some international stuff here and there. But I'm probably best known as the first ever mind reader on America's Got Talent, made it to the top 10. And that's where my career kicked off, and then have been traveling and performing ever since. I've done a couple other TV spots on Penn and Teller Fool Us, Ellen, Live and Kelly and Ryan, which are big shows here in the States. So do a lot of comedy and improv as well that I try to mix into my show. So keep it a little fun and lighthearted and fresh.
Love that. And you're currently on tour at the moment, as if like all of this stuff are going on as well?
Yeah, tour meaning I'm just getting to the gigs that are booked for me. So, you know, I'm constantly, you know.
Some modest.
Ideally, it would be routed a lot better, but it's a lot of one nights in just random cities and then flying back to my apartment and then flying to the next one. So, but it feels like the world's opened up and we're back at it, so. I'm
That's what we like to hear. No commitment, one night stand with a theatre. That's all you want. Best way to live life.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't even know where to pick up from that. That's like one way of rolling with it. But Eric, let's get down to business here. America's Got Talent. Let's start there because that's a really interesting point. What inspired you to do that in the first place?
I had just made the switch from like a professional, like out of college, what I got my major in job, but decided that wasn't for me. So I wanted to pursue the entertainment business full time and see if I can make it as a mind reader. But I realized the markets I was approaching, everyone had some sort of TV credit to stand out and I had nothing. I was just doing some shows here and there, really scraping by. So I figured, hey, I could never do the show. They only give you 90 seconds. There's nothing I could do. And then after like 2 years of struggling by, I was like, maybe I could do the show. Let's see if I can get a TV credit. So I didn't tell anyone I was auditioning. And I just went, tried it. And I was like, worst case scenario, I'll have the experience of what a TV audition is like, even if nothing comes from it. To my surprise, they put me into the first round. And then after the clip, really, my goal was accomplished. So then the fact that I kept going through the show, I was like, oh, shoot, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? And to get as far as I did was, kind of a blessing. All I wanted was a TV clip, really. And I got that out of the first appearance on the show. So, yeah.
That's a one for one. Nailed it.
And what sort of stuff, this is what I'm interested in, because so many people talk about like TV, like so many magicians we speak to and say, that's the dream, that's where I want to go. Like everyone seems to be in that mind because they just want to share what they do and love with like so many more people. Was it literally just to get a TV clip to just get the college shows, or was there something deeper? What I'm trying to say is, was there any other motivation for doing this, or was it just like, I want to do more college shows, this will make me look really cool so that I can do more college shows?
Yeah, I think it literally was just for marketing, for me to just get my name out there so people would know. I mean, it's if you think about the amount of time a commercial costs on television, you know, I was getting that essentially for free for just appearing on the show. But there is a difference, too, of going on a show like that and doing well, or just appearing, versus like being memorable. And I think that's a big key, is my name is pretty memorable. So the fact that they latched on to Dittleman, and you know, Howard Stern would say it over again on his radio show, you know, that's the part that I think was more valuable, is like, you can do well on any of these shows, but if you're forgotten as soon as the next season comes, then what's the point, right? So you know, I had the Ellen opportunity came like right as the next season was starting, so that helped keep my name. You know, I think of it like plate spinning. So as soon as one starts to wobble, you want to try and get that to spin again and keep going. So I think, yeah, even people that go on like Fool Us or whatever, I say, you could do great on that show, but if you're not memorable, you're not going to stand out. So yeah, I think being memorable is the key part to all of this.
Yeah, I think that is the main thing, because at the end of the day, if you bring it to an ad, for example, like you've said, there's no point paying a ton of money to put an ad on TV if no one's going to buy your bloody crisps at the end of it. If they think, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that was cool, goodbye. Right. Where would you start then? Like, someone listening to this right now thinks, oh my gosh, Eric's done pretty well from all of this stuff. I should do it myself. But the key you're saying is, hang on, you got to think about how people are going to remember you so that you can build a sustainable career off the back of it. Where the hell do you start with this then?
Yeah, two things to way to answer this, I guess. I chose specifically to do a blindfold routine on my first round because I knew it was something visual and something that used all the judges, so that it would be memorable and like, people would have that stage picture. I always think in stage picture too, of like, what hasn't been seen on that show? What are people kind of gonna latch onto? In the, like, if they're taking a digital photograph of that moment, right? So it also helped. I watched that show from season one and knew everything that happened prior to seven seasons of it. But I wouldn't also recommend just jumping straight into a big platform like that if you don't have the experience. I did a lot of radio stuff. I did a lot of local television. So there's opportunities for you to explore, you know, how to be on screen before you get put in front of millions and millions of people, and it can be your little trial run. So I got very friendly with my local radio program and would pop on and do sets for them and do like their outdoor concert events. Like, they did like a Rock the Dock kind of thing, which was a fun outdoor thing. And you're performing in tough environments with a lot of noisy drunk people that are there to listen to, you know, rock and roll music. But you know, I did it for more of the relationship and the marketing aspect of it than the artistic theatrical reward of doing the shows. So I think you got to just be creative and figure out what opportunities exist in your area, and then see if you're ready for a bigger step up from that.
Yeah, 100%. And it's really nice that you've touched so early on in the episode something which I don't know about you, Aidan, but I've noticed a trend on anyone that we speak to, we invite as a guest onto the podcast, who's doing well, like you and everyone else who we've invited on, they're clearly doing flipping well out of their career. They all mention the same thing. They mentioned, yes, I've done this, 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 I've done all of these cool stuff. But then it boils down to the one core thing, which you've just mentioned. Yeah. At the heart of it, I'd done this one thing just to build the relationship with those people, because it goes back to that whole thing which everyone says, it's not what you know, but it's who you know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely about networking. And I mean, there's the saying, there's only one showbiz. So sometimes if you're gonna make these connections, you also got to be careful about maintaining or not stepping on the wrong toes, because oftentimes you'll run into the same people over and over and over again. So I never want to burn any bridges, because you never know who's going to give you that opportunity when the timing's right.
I think Ali Bongo said, I can't remember if it was Ali Bongo or Paul Daniels, someone said it a while back, and it was like, be nice to everyone because you never know when you're going to run back into them on the way down.
Yeah, there's some markets that I'm in that we always say is you see people twice, on the way up and on the way down.
Oh, yeah.
This is so interesting. I'm loving hearing that it's universal principles just across the board, which is something that I know for myself I was very skeptical of, especially as I started getting into the more sort of ticketed events and that kind of stuff. I thought, well, I can't build a relationship with absolutely every person that's coming to those shows and all of that kind of stuff. But actually, it's those relationships are pretty damn important, which is nice. So, Eric, we started off with these like radio shows and doing these other things and actually getting the experience in with those and actually jumping to, right, let's why not? We've been on a radio station, we've been on a TV show. Why not go for the TV show? Like, crazy jump in and of itself. What was the shift like in terms of your business after doing that AGT appearance?
Yeah, it's so funny because a lot of people assume the fame or opportunities come right away. I remember, you know, again, like I said, I was struggling for a couple years just trying to figure out my footing into the entertainment world. I had a day job where I worked at a board game store. And I remember airing my first couple episodes on America's Got Talent while still working at the board game store and customers coming in and being like, we saw you. And then it got to the point where it was just like a little too much. Like, I was like, I should not be still in this job and I should be pursuing this, you know, huge opportunity. So that's kind of where I made the shift. But again, there is a lag time in people seeing you and you doing well on a show like AGT and then signing the contracts. That comes next, and then you got to wait to do those gigs for the money to come in. So, I mean, there is this weird kind of, you know, lag that people just assume instant success that you're going to be, you know, out there traveling. So I luckily had a good support system, and, you know, I was doing a lot of colleges at the time, and I realized I needed to go national. So I actually teamed up with Matt Franco, and we started our own little agency, Franco Talent, and that lasted for a couple years until he won the whole damn show. So what are the odds, right? But I always said he was the Franco, I was the talent, but I guess he proved me wrong on that. I'm trying to remember what the question was now. But
well, I think the important point being there that it wasn't like you've been on telly, oh, you must be amazing now. You're busy, booked every single day, 400 times a day. It's actually that delay.
You still have to work for it. And I always said that a show like that opens doors. So it shows you the opportunities that can happen, but then you still have to prove yourself in those situations. So, you know, All fame really does is amplify what you've already have going for you, I think. And I was the most famous mentalist for a brief moment, but it's kind of nice that it has died down and I could just like focus on doing shows and not getting bugged walking through the streets or something like that, which happened for just a quick time.
Forget Eric. You're on our podcast now. After this episode airs, bang, top spot,
okay,
straight again.
Up.
There you go. Easy. So you've said something really interesting, that obviously there's that misconception. People think that just being in the limelight on TV, that bang, there's a career sorted, but you're actually like, no, let's be realistic. Yes, it's going to open a load of doors, but you've still got to effectively turn the handle and open those doors. How do you do that? You mentioned you set up an agency, but like, what type of work did you do to maximize on the opportunities that came about from being in the limelight?
Different opportunities came through. Like, you know, I did cruises for a little bit and I realized, you know, I still do every once in a while, but they're not for me necessarily, because I like being on land and performing for audiences that aren't trapped to watch entertainment. As things came, I just was like, all right, can I do this? Is this in my wheelhouse? Can I try it? Let's see how it goes. Assess if that's what I want to be doing. Do I resonate with those audiences? Do I not? How do I have to change my show to fit this audience? Because, like, that's a big thing for me, is I still have this, like, I don't know, thing called artistic integrity, that I want to do the show the way I want to do it. And that's the balance always when you're fighting the artistic side versus the commercial side, is whether you're not, you have to censor yourself for certain audiences, or certain things are going to have to play differently for different audiences. So I'm still trying to find, you know, those opportunities that fit my style and my comedic sensibilities. And sometimes if things are a little risque, I'd like to find those opportunities, which is why a lot of colleges work well for me, because things can kind of go any direction that way. But I also know how to temper things depending on if it's like a high-end, classy corporate event versus like a more, you know, whatever, blue-collar holiday party. You know, those are different events you can perform at and do different things at. But that was all about me just assessing what opportunities came and what the best fit for me. So
That's so good. It's such a relief to hear that people are actually out there saying, like, oh yeah, I just picked what I wanted to do and just did that, rather than we speak to a lot of entertainers that are at the early stage of their career and they're all, I want to go and do cruise ships. Like, the amount of people that are just arm everything at cruise ships or just these specific type of corporate events, no experience in that field. And I'm half seeing that kind of realization that you've just shared with us there in them in a few years' time, when they get their first cruise ship gig, thinking, oh, this isn't really what I want to do. And so was that a matter of you just did a lot of different things to find what worked?
Yeah, I think that's the key, just for flight time, for anything to get good and become bulletproof and no matter what venue you're at, is do a lot of bad venues and do a lot of, like, strange gigs. I mean, I remember when I was first starting out, you know, I would try and create my own shows to have a place to perform, and you need a place to be bad. You need a place to struggle. You need a place to, you know, where everyone is drunk, like at those Rock the Docks, like I'm saying, and it's really trial by fire. Or, you know, the college market was a good trial by fire, because you never know what you're going to walk into. Sometimes you're in these gorgeous theaters, which are great, and it sets you up for success. But sometimes you're working in a cafe gymnatorium during a lunch meal while everyone's playing Magic the Gathering in the back, and you have to interrupt their meal because they didn't know a show was going to happen, and just be like, all right, look at me. And it's almost like street performing in a way. So every different type of venue is a learning experience, and you learn new tools on how to approach. And I think the key is to be adaptable as much as possible with your requirements and your tech, and, you know, oh, the sound system's crap, I might as well, you know, learn to use my projection voice that I learned from, you know, theater as a kid, and ditch the microphone for this show because it's just going to be a distraction. So I think those are the opportunities that I'm fascinated by. But I also think you need a place to be bad in terms of creating material, which is why I had a show that lasted for 5 years here in New York City that I started called Amazeballs, which was a sort of a booked open mic. But the goal was, I was like, magic and mentalism and variety arts is very family friendly. What is the R-rated experimental version of that? And can I encourage my friends to try not their A material, but brand new stuff? And I would tell the audience, I was like, hey, this is a free show for you. You might learn a secret or two if something messes up, but don't be a jerk about it. We're all friends here. We're all trying stuff that might become A material eventually. And it was sort of like, I modeled it almost like there's an underground comedy show called Whiplash that is more for the comedy fans, and it's just like you never know who's going to drop in. And I wanted that kind of underground punk rock feel to a magic and mentalism show. So I did that for 5 years and worked on a lot of material, and some of the material I worked on ended up on TV, like my dirty charades routine I did on Fool Us. So we got workshopped there. So yeah, I think you need both the experience of crazy venues to help out just in terms of your performance acumen, and then also how to develop material as well. So
I know one of the things that Aidan is obsessed about, he's writing a book on feedback all about the moment, which I'm sure he will mention in a second. But you've touched on there kind of like refining everything from, I guess, your entertainment product that you're actually doing, the material, and like the tech and everything that you've just gone through. What is your process when it comes to feedback, and like how do you make sure to refine things? Is there a particular system that you follow? Is there a particular thing that you do when it comes to looking, okay, I've done this, how do I make the next show better? Okay, I've done this, how do I make the tech better? Okay, I've done this, what do I need to improve on here? Is there a particular thing that you follow then?
Yeah, I kind of had a foot in the comedy world, so it's always listening to the audience and just what they're giving you. And oftentimes, if you think a bit or a joke is working, it's like you got to try it in front of multiple audiences, because if it dies, you know, for majority of them, you got to take it out of your show. But you can fall into what's known as laughing ears, where certain comics hear that their jokes are funny without the audience actually laughing at them. It's kind of like this self-delusional thing. So that's why you have to record yourself as well. So you have to know, on playback, if you're not hearing the laughs, because on stage you're like, oh, I was getting all the laughs, and then you realize, oh no, I really wasn't, or so forth, then you know you have to make those adjustments. So I think, you know, I usually kind of audio record myself when I'm doing sets. I sometimes set up the camera if I have a camera on me, so I can watch it. A good strategy is also to set up a camera in the back to focus it on the audience. So then you can really pay attention to where the audience is looking and what they're reacting and when. And then you can make those refinements after the fact.
I love that. I love that. Just the different uses. Is there any particular reason that you prefer or just default to audio? Because I've never heard that done before.
It's just from the comic side of things. It's like you always have your phone, which you can always just hit an audio recording on. I don't always have an extra camera on me to record. So I think it's just a practicality thing.
Nice. I'm going to start doing that myself, actually. That's a note to self right there.
Plus, if you're improvising lines, you know, you're recording the audio of that, and then you can use... I do a lot of improv in my shows, but if you keep coming back to the same lines that hopefully are original to you, by the way, like that's a whole nother conversation about originality and how I despise hack lines and so forth. But if you can sort of build up a Rolodex in your mind so that you have these go-tos of when certain situations occur, that you could be like, oh, I can pluck that line that worked well there. And then it seems spur of the moment because you're kind of just indexing these things that were improvised at one point as well.
So good. That's so good. Oh my God, this is absolute gold. My shows are going to change so much after this, which is great. So
I hope so, because they're bloody awful, mate.
I walked straight into that one. Walked straight into that. So Eric, we've spoken a little bit about the performance side of things. I'd love to know, like, what would you say has been the biggest challenge from a business standpoint? Because it's all well and good being able to have great shows, great lines, all of this stuff is amazing, but to a degree it doesn't really pay the bills to an extent. So what would you say has been the biggest struggle over this journey when it comes down to that element?
Well, what does pay the bills is, again, being memorable, I think. And I always have the Steve Martin quote from his book, Born Standing Up, that says, be so good they can't ignore you. And I think that is the thing I strive for. And I think if you get people talking about you, or they're like, can you believe this? I can't believe what just happened. You got to see this guy. That's going to generate your leads for you, I think. And I mean, I work with managers and agents who do a lot of, you know, lead generating themselves. So I don't have to rely on them as much anymore. But every show I do is an advertisement that can hopefully lead to other work. So I'm constantly trying to put my best foot forward and making those memorable moments so that you never know, you know, so-and-so who's got a company party coming up that saw me in this audience can be like, oh, he would be great for this, you know, my company party coming up. Let's get his card. Let's figure out how this guy booked them so that we can book them as well. So I think work begets work, and just figuring out the leads. I mean, there's probably things I could be doing more proactive of, you know, constant contact or cold calling or reaching out. But I leave a lot of that up to my my managers and agents now, because I know it's just about, you know, getting out there. Now, I do go to a lot of like booking conferences, which can be exhausting for different markets, corporate, college, where I'm in the booth and literally doing like kind of trade show style to, you know, it could be very superficial because you're only talking to people for a short amount of time and you're trying to like sell yourself next to the hundreds of other magic acts that are also there and prove yourself and your worth. But I think if you, again, slow down and try and make an individual connection, you have a much stronger chance of not only building like a client or lead from that, but like I have friends in these markets that know that they're just like, oh, we're going to book Dittleman now because, you know, he comes to our school every year and, you know, he's a good friend. And like the advisor's like, hey, we're going to help our friends out, or like he helps us out to fill a need. So you got to have that mentality when you're working with people, is like, what needs are you trying to fulfill, and how can you do it so that, you know, everyone wants to do business with their friends.
Don't steal my quote that I say on the podcast all the time. I say people like to buy from their friends, so why not make them your friends? Eric's been listening to the podcast, Aidan, and he's stolen my advice here. What's he doing? I think there's a real valuable nugget that I don't want people to brush over from what you said. Because you said, yeah, I have managers, I have agents, they do this for me, which sounds nice, which has obviously built up over the years. And as you've become more known, yes, naturally it's easier to get people like that, I'm guessing. But you said, oh, I do a lot of stuff and, you know, I put on these stage shows, which, funny enough, we was actually recording a podcast, which is probably going to come out soon, on inviting your clients to stage shows. So it's quite an interesting thing that you brought that up now. He's a mind reader. He's real, people. There's a reason why he's the best in the world. But you've mentioned a key point. It's all good and well doing these various different things to generate leads, whether that's networking, going to trade shows, putting on shows, getting an agent, getting a manager, cold calling, whatever it is you do. But if you're not connecting with people, if you're not making them a friend, if you're not getting them to remember you, if you're not being memorable, if you're not actually connecting with the actual individual, they're just going to forget. They're going to go on. You're going to seem like every other magician. And it is so true that if you can just build a little bit rapport with someone, then already they want to work with you. They trust you. They like you. They understand you. You've taken the time to understand them. And that is such a powerful thing. And regardless of whatever you do to generate leads, it is the rapport building. It is the connecting, which ultimately makes the lead tool work.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the times the business is done, you know, after the trade show or grabbing lunch together, or it's again trying to find whatever that bond is that you can make. And again, being memorable. I mean, Dittleman is a very memorable name, and I say it a lot during my show. So
gotta do what you gotta do.
Exactly.
Oh dear. No, this is amazing. Like, so I wanna pick your brains a little bit about what it's like on some form of tour, right? What actually, I know we mentioned earlier that it's very much one-stop shops, backwards and forwards, here, there, and everywhere, but what is that actually, what's that experience like? Because a lot of people want to do it.
Well, ideally, you do want to like route these together. That is the goal, but it doesn't always happen practically. And again, some of these trade shows I go to are booking conferences where they try to give clients incentive to book near each other on certain dates. There's like 3 of 5 where you can get 3 shows within 5 days and so forth, and your price kind of drops to help with routing and kind of sharing the travel. However, these days, it's more one-offs. A lot of clients aren't doing that because they're like, I have this set date I have in mind and I want the show then, and I don't care about a discount. I just want to go. I want the entertainment on my date. So what that consists of is often we actually do like an all-inclusive price. So I handle a lot of my travel myself, but I'm always looking for flights. Key, by the way, stick to a loyalty program. Man, I fly one airline, and when I can, on occasional, I have to switch over. But having status makes your travel life way better when you're flying. So especially this past couple weeks, I've had some really bad delays and cancellations of flights, and being able to go into the lounge where the real high-end agents are, where they can help you out at their computer and do magical things. that's very key to have that. But it's not as glamorous as everyone thinks, because it's a lot of seeing airports, rental car facilities, the road, the hotel, then straight to the gig, and then back to the hotel, then wake up in the morning, drive back to the airport, and then go. And everyone's like, oh, you get to travel America. You get to see all these amazing places. Like, yes, I get to see a lot of flat highways and a lot of hotels that I'm a loyalty member of. And the venue's fun. The show is a blast, and seeing these gorgeous, auditoriums sometimes and theaters. But in terms of really exploring, I usually try to nap so I'm ready to do the show if I have any extra time. But if I've napped and I have even more time for some reason, I'm in the town earlier than I intend to, I do try to go out and at least see something to, keep me sane and see, what's going on in the city. Or I have a little app on my phone that's like the Roadside America app to see whatever strange things are around. So this town has the world's largest otter sculpture. Sure, I'll go see that. Because you're on the road by yourself and you got to entertain yourself a lot of the times. It's funny though, because I have a lot of performer friends in that are traveling constantly, and we actually run into each other and see each other more often in airports than we do in each other's hometowns. So it is, it's not necessarily as glamorous as everyone thinks it's made out to be, but I love going to places and sharing my act for people who, wouldn't necessarily come to New York City or be able to see that. So plus there's that old adage, you're never a prophet in your hometown. So, you get paid more to travel rather than necessarily where everyone knew you and were like, oh, I remember Aiden when he wasn't doing magic. Now he's calling himself a wizard.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. That's the same reaction from my mom. It's great.
It's great. Person that goes to shows.
Dear. Well, I mean, first things first, I want to see a giant otter statue on tour. And if we aren't chasing random things like giant otter statues, what are we in this business for? I mean, God, let's focus on the most important stuff. Floki, my little dog, has just come running in. So I'm going to pass over to Ashley for a question here.
I did just see the world's largest buffalo in North Dakota. So it's got its perks.
It's a glamorous life. That's a glamorous life. But I think this ultimately just boils. I don't know how to swerve this from giant buffaloes to otter statues. We're a bit of conundrum in the podcast, boys and girls. I don't know where we're going to go from here. Eric's unhinged today. But I think this does. Oh, here we go. I've got the swerve ball. Are you ready for this? You tell. We've been doing this for 2 years. We know what we're doing. This all comes back to what we mentioned earlier, you see, and it's just being essential with the work that you take on. You've done a lot of things. You've opened a lot of doors. You've taken advantage of the opportunities, but you've just come around to just focus on, there's 1,000,001 different things that I could be doing with my career, but this is what I love, so I'm going to follow through with it. And for some people, they would hate the flying and the traveling and doing loads of stuff. For me, that's why I literally said to Aiden a while back, you know what, I'm only going to plan to do about 2 private gigs a month because I can't stand to do more. I like to have my time to do something else. But it takes you to do a lot and experiment with different things to come to that realization. Like, you can't get into magic and then think, like the people we see, yeah, I want to work on TV, or yeah, I want to like travel around and do cruise ships, because like you haven't done it, you haven't experimented with it, you haven't realized what you actually want, and you don't know what it's really like behind the scenes. Like what you mentioned, people might not be into what are statues and going around and seeing all that stuff.
That's just what I like to do when I'm on tour. I'm sure other people find other vices and things to do, but I keep things very, very friendly and into my interests. But yeah, you're right. It's all about, you know, it is a lot of hard work of just, and it takes a toll on you just through traveling and everything. And again, if you just focus on the show itself, it's like, there's that old saying, it's like, I do the show for free, you're paying me to get there, which is very true. And sometimes you have to work magic, literal magic, with the airlines to get to certain gigs, because, you know, by any means necessary, do everything in your power if there's any delays or hiccups to fulfill the contract to be there, because that's what they're expecting. It's their event. They booked you for their company gala, and they don't have a backup. So you have to do everything in your power to get there and perform and deliver. So I think that's a key thing to always remember. I remember, you know, some flight to Missouri got canceled, and I had to go to Chicago, rent a car, drive now 9 hours, make it just in time for the gig. And it's like those road warrior stories that people don't realize. That's you gotta use your problem solving skills in order to make the client happy sometimes.
I love that. Not the terrible travel journeys and stuff.
Oh, no, he does. He loves that.
that's what I live for. Never mind the otter statues. I will sit in a car for hours and hours,
shows,
and hours.
I love speaking to entertainers. They get stressed.
Oh, that's fantastic. So we haven't really spoken about this in this conversation, but where do your virtual shows fit into all of this? Because I know we spoke just off camera before we started about the virtual world. How does that fit into your schedule?
Yeah, well, I made the transition during the pandemic, like everyone else, to mind reading virtual shows. And obviously I was doing them all while we're in lockdown. One unique thing, by the way, I wanted to bring up is, like, I took a different approach to virtual shows at first. I've now since just done them on Zoom. But at first I was like, what is the best analog for mind reading that's similar to something that already exists? And I was thinking about radio shows and like Howard Stern and so forth. So I was like, I'm going to do my virtual show like a radio call-in show, but just with video. So I used a Zoom room as a kind of holding pen for callers to call in, but it was all done on YouTube at the time. So everyone would watch on YouTube and then they'd call in with their phone or computer, and I'd bring them up that way. So I thought that was a little fun and unique way of making that first play and figuring out how to do all this stuff, which was so inspiring to realize that everyone was kind of in this new creative zone on how to tackle a unique problem. And the different solutions I saw were great to see from my friends. And I was like, oh yeah, we still can put a new show together. It's like, after doing it for so long of your, you know, kind of stage show, it's like, oh yeah, I still am creative in different ways. So that was kind of fun to see. But nowadays, as the world's opened up, I'm doing far less virtual shows. I'm mostly on the road. But because I want to deliver a product when I still do a virtual show that's of high quality, it's almost like booking me just at a gig back home. Because I'm not taking my studio on the road, and I don't want to trust a hotel internet speed or, you know, whatever crap lighting they have there in the hotel room. I want, if they're buying a virtual show, I want my studio. So sometimes I have to, like I did this past Monday, do a virtual show in New York City, that as soon as it was done, head to LaGuardia Airport, fly to Orlando, do a corporate show that night. So again, the routing isn't necessarily great, and I kind of see it as, you know, it's its own entity now. But yeah, it's just kind of like booking a local show in my apartment and then routing everything from there. So that's where I'm at with virtual shows these days. But it's fun doing them, but I still love the feedback of a live audience and kind of being able to improvise, engage everyone in the moment, and really see everyone coming together as an audience, which you do have to teach people how to do again, because they're not used to being in an audience together. So you got to be like, yeah, you can all work together, you can laugh together, don't be shy sometimes. And you kind of have to coach them with those first couple of routines of how to be an audience.
Like all the skills we learned in like virtual shows, people join us, they don't know what they're doing, they don't know how to clap. I know you're friends with Harrison, who we know, who does just like insane with like the virtual shows as well. But it's really interesting to see like kind of what you've done with your career and how you've taken it, because so many people do different things with it, which is really wonderful. But as we come to the end of the podcast, Eric, we've covered a lot today, and I think this has been a really valuable episode, starting from the beginnings to find out kind of like where your career kind of skyrocketed, where it was before, what were some of the opportunities, some of the little nuggets of gold which people should really rewind and hone in on and get that pen and paper down so you don't miss out on any of Eric's golden advice. Can you let us in on, like, I don't know, you can say no, say no to me, I ain't gonna care. Can you let us know on a sneaky secret, where is your career going? Where do you want it to be? What are you looking to do over the next 1, 3, 5 years?
That's all top secret information. No.
Damn, I tried, people.
That's just because I don't have an answer. No, the answer is just to continue working. That's always been the goal, is just to continue working. And I've seen, you know, I look at the older performers that I looked up to, and some of them who, you know, didn't necessarily retire with a lot of money. You know, it's kind of like that warning sign. It's like, what are they doing wrong, or, you know, business wise, that, you know, they weren't as successful as everyone just kind of pictured, you know, these greats and these mentors. It's like, all right, I know now to start saving, you know, some of the money that I'm making now for later, and to figure out how to stay fresh and always, you know, remarket myself when, you know, maybe I'm not as the new young hip guy in a certain market, but how can I then take what I am offering and how can I approach other markets? So I think being able to pivot and being self-aware is a huge thing that some people aren't doing in our industry, is to always be adapting, and so that I can have that longevity of work. And I think that's the key. And and just find whatever things that are interesting me artistically and try and explore those, and not being afraid to take risks and try stuff out of your comfort zone. Like we were saying, you know, in the beginning days, trying to just every type of venue or my amazeball show, being experimental and trying things that you wouldn't normally do, whether it's you know, something, you know, political or out there that's, you know, not for every audience, but you could try it in some audiences to see if it works, and then if that's something you want to pursue, continue seeking out those types of audiences. I think that's key. So for me, it's just you know, trying to figure out you know, how to keep busy and how to stay working, and that's always been my goal.
I absolutely love that. It's a nice, nice clear cut. I just want to keep going. Just keep on rolling.
Right, just want to keep doing what I love.
And then also I'm gonna plug my podcast as well, because that's another project.
I was
going to
ask you about that. We've gone for 50 minutes and like you've not even mentioned your podcast. I was like, waiting for it. I was like, okay, he's mentioned Matt Franco. No, he's been polite. What the hell? I was like, there's no plugs or anything. All our listeners are like, there's no plugs in this episode. What's gone wrong?
I like to save my plugs to the end. we did start a podcast over the pandemic, me and Matt Franco, just to kind of, we always touch base. Me and Matt go way back, obviously. But we call each other every week, and we figured, like, hey, other people might be interested in the things that we're interested in, the magic world and the mind reading world. So we started a podcast called Mind Over Magic, which you can listen anywhere where you're listening to this now. It was really interesting to see how you know, Matt with his Vegas residency at the Link, how they were opening up during the pandemic, and also how things in New York City were opening up on my end, and how traveling started picking up again. But we talk a lot about, you know, a lot of philosophy and theory on performance, and we have a riddle and a trivia every a question every episode. So if you don't like the magic talk, at least you could work your brain a little bit. And you
Damn,
can also
that's
marvel
where we're going wrong.
at how many movies Matt has never seen, which baffles me every single time it comes up. So, but it's the vibe is just two friends hanging out and talking about things that we're passionate about, which happens to be magic and mentalism and performance and other things in showbiz. So if you're at all interested in showbiz, I think it's a good listen, whether or not you're a magician or not. So.
Absolutely. And we'll link that in the show notes below. So if anyone's interested, scroll down, click a link and give it a listen. But make sure you come back because we're vain. We need you. We need you.
Just add it to your list of shows. That's so you, so listen if to you're them doing both. A long trip from Chicago to Missouri, that's 9 hours, and you get through all the Successful Mentalist podcasts, you can then listen to some Mind Over Magic.
Or if you just want something more fun than ours.
Yes. So you just, we're just going to see our listenership just drop through the floor right now. Which is great.
And where can people find you personally, Eric? Where's the best place for people to come and stalk your world?
Yeah, social media is probably the best to keep up with where I'm at. That's where I post my show dates and everything like that. Or you can see me post random selfies on Instagram during shows at edittleman, and that's edittelman. Or if you want to learn more about my shows, you can visit my website, ericdittleman.com.
I'm going to visit that afterwards and look at those naughty, naughty selfies.
And also, I did buy all the domains, so if you try to spell my name wrong, it'll probably get to me still. So.
That's so good. Pro tip for anyone out there with a slightly complicated name. Why else do you think I call myself a wizard, Eric?
Exactly.
It makes sense.
I'm boring. That's why I don't get booked, Eric. My name's just a colour. That's my problem. I'm just a colour. Oh, boy. Well, it's coming to the end. We know where to find you. We know your podcast. We've got listeners in about 120 countries around the world now. So is there one defining piece of advice or piece of knowledge or any piece of information? We will leave it totally up to you, which I'm quite scared of what you're going to say now. But whatever it goes into, is there anything that you'd like to finish on or just say to the audience at large?
It's hard to boil it down to just one.
There we go. It's hard to boil it down. No, and that's a tip for your eggs, ladies and gentlemen. So thank you so much, Eric.
I think really just remember to have fun. I think a lot of my success has come from just my my fun-loving personality. So I think people want to just be in a room with people they like. It doesn't really matter what they do as long as they're having a good time. I always say, you know, showbiz is just kind of a reason to stare at another person on stage without being creepy. So I think if you're someone of people want to stare at or look at or just be in the same room with, that you've got a foot in the door already. So just keep having fun and you know, do what you love. So
amazing. Thank you so much, Eric. It's been an absolute blast. Thanks for coming
on.
Thanks
for having me. Yes, this was fun.
Hey, it's Aiden here. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would really mean the world to us if you just took a moment to leave a rating and a review on your preferred podcast player. That way it just helps us grow the show and get it into the ears of more listeners across the world in a non-creepy way. Also, when you're ready to roll, here are three ways that we can help you right now. Number one is to join our free Facebook group. It's called the Magician's Business Group, and we're creating the most valuable space on the internet for entertainers that are looking to grow and improve their business. We'd love you to join us inside, so to do that, just head over to thesuccessfulmentalist.com/group, and the magic of the internet will take you straight there, or just pull open Facebook and search for the Magician's Business Group. Number two is to take our new quiz. It'll help you find the biggest opportunity in your entertainment business right now. And in just a few quick questions, you'll be presented with a 7-minute breakdown of your biggest opportunity and how you can actually go about tackling that to help increase your entertainment business and boost it completely. In order to take the quiz, just head over to thesuccessfulmentalist.com/quiz. That's thesuccessfulmentalist.com/quiz, and we'll be able to get you your results. Number 3, momentum. If you'd like to make an extra $2,000 a month in magic without paying a penny for advertising, we'd love to help you. Our latest coaching program, Momentum, is designed to get you booking gigs every single week for at least £500 so that you can be growing your entertainment business without having to worry about websites or business cards or advertising or any of that kind of stuff. To find out more, just head over to thesuccessfulmentalist.com/momentum. That's thesuccessfulmentalist.com/momentum, and we'll send you all of the details.